Greetings to the brightest audience in the nation. I am not Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church, and known in some parts to this very day as America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic homophobic anti-choice talk show host. I am Doug McBurney. That's right, the second string is in today as Bob attends to pastoral duties. And I want to thank Bob for allowing me in the studio today. And I hope we have a good time. Are we going to open up the phones or not? Probably not. I had a question I wanted to throw out, but I have already instructed the call screener to be extremely, extremely vigilant in making sure that only the most critical tidbits of information make it on the air from out there amongst you people on the phone. So we may take calls, we may not take calls. We got a lot of stories. It's going to be hard to get through all this and take calls. But the question I had relates to Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney. Earlier, me and the producer were talking about the show, and I realized I've got my three young children here in the studio, and I realized that we could not discuss Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich in front of the children. We had to go into a secluded area so that we could discuss. Anyway, so I want to thank Bob. Bob, thank you, first of all, for attending to your pastoral responsibilities, and second, for allowing me behind the microphone here at KGOV, and, of course, the mighty 50,000-watt blowtorch of the Rocky Mountain West, AM 670, KLTT, on the show that will probably be found in the end to have been more responsible for saving the world than any other individual broadcast in the history of broadcasting. It's an honor to be here, Bob, and I sure do appreciate it. So I want to thank Bob. Now, I also want to thank Newt Gingrich. Newt, we go back a long way, you and me. And I made a prediction about a month and a half ago that Newt Gingrich's political career was obviously over. It was obvious to anyone who was paying attention. And I just want to thank Newt for imploding right on schedule, because it always helps a talk show host to look right. And Newt, I really do appreciate your efforts. And I want to thank, probably more importantly, I want to thank Bob Enyart, Greg Jackson, Steve Dace, and probably a list of 100 other people whose names I either don't know or I don't have time to mention everyone. I want to thank all those people for ending Mitt Romney's career. We really do appreciate that, because, boy, was that getting tedious. So my question would be, whose political career is more viable at this point, Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney? I think they're both neck and neck, headed down the swirling sewer drain. And we couldn't be more thankful for the efforts on behalf of Bob and Greg and Steve. I had a conversation with Bob's first string producer earlier today. And in an email, he said to me, "Doug, call me crazy, but I think Mitt Romney may head and capture the GOP nomination." So I sent him back an email and I said, "Will, you're crazy." But I was just joking around. Actually, I think Will is a very astute young fellow. But he just hasn't been paying attention to the self-destructive nature of Republican politics as long as I have. So he just hasn't called this one yet, but I've called it. Mitt is out. Mitt is done. Stick a fork in him, so to speak, like we used to say back in the day, whenever that was. Anyway, I really want to thank especially Steve Dace and Bob Enyart for their efforts during the 08 campaign, and then Greg Jackson for just refusing to allow Mitt to even get up off the ground before he drove another stake through his political career at every turn. Well, it's paid off, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Now, finally, another thank you I've got to throw out there. I want to thank the makeup artist on Piers Morgan last night on CNN. Are you familiar with Piers Morgan, Nate? You a daily consumer of CNN product? No, but you have seen the... Okay, so I know at least one person knows who I'm talking about. Anyway, I really want to thank the makeup artist on Piers Morgan last night for taking a huge risk with his career. He took a huge risk last night, and no doubt today, Piers Morgan's makeup artist is basking in the glory of his success. Now, I can kind of imagine in my mind what happened before Piers Morgan went on the air last night with his guest Christian Amanpour. I mean, I can almost hear it in my own head as the makeup artist sits down with Christiana Amanpour, and he says, "Now, Christiana, I want you tonight to appear on the broadcast as a woman. Now, wait. No, don't get excited. Hear me out on this. Hear me out. I've got makeup. I've got several outfits with matching accessories. And I think, Christian, together, we can pull this off. I just want you to work with me." And, folks, I switched on Piers Morgan last night, and there's Christian Amanpour with full makeup on, dressed up like a girl with nice matching earrings and the necklace. And, you know, many people thought it couldn't be done. But for whoever that makeup artist is on Piers Morgan tonight, he's secured his place in broadcast history by pulling that off last night. Christian looked positively attractive. She looked attractive. Yeah, I'm going to admit it right here. Okay, so congratulations on that. Speaking of broadcast history, is everyone familiar with the hullabaloo surrounding the U.S. Open this past week? Was it this past week? Was it 2 weeks ago? I'm not sure. I've been on the road. I've been out working, participating in the mighty Obama recovery, which has me traveling and working way more than I want to. Just trying to make ends meet. So the days have blended together. When was the U.S. Open? It was last weekend. Yeah, last weekend. Apparently, the television network NBC, they put together a promo where they cut out the words "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, when I heard about this, I was on the road, had no idea. I thought maybe the kids said the pledge and NBC just, put sound over in "under God" or did some. But you know what? I found out upon further review that NBC had actually concocted this whole pre-broadcast intro on tape. They had written it, had the kids perform it, taped it, put it on the air, and it just left "Indivisible and Under God" out of the Pledge of Allegiance, which it's scary in one respect that you got a group of young public school students, government school products, who you put the Pledge of Allegiance in front of them, they just read through it like a bunch of zombies. They have no idea what's going on. That's kind of scary when you think about the next generation. But the good news is that NBC has apologized. I pulled this off the wire a few days ago from the Washington Post. NBC has apologized for cutting the words "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance in their lead-up to coverage of the U.S. Open, so we can all feel better that they've apologized. And apparently, they apologized within the hour of this segment airing. And the golf announcer, he right on the air during the match, he said something like this: "We regrettably, a portion of the Pledge of Allegiance that was in the feature was edited out. It was not done to upset anyone. And we'd like to apologize to those of you who may have been offended by it. We just forgot about God. Is anyone really surprised? I mean, our sister network is MSNBC, where any serious mention of God or Jesus Christ is a firing offense. Now, back to the match." So that was the apology. That was the apology from the golf announcer. You know what that... That was my golf announcer voice. Maybe you don't watch a lot of golf, but they're always talking in very hushed tones, especially when they're insulting the creator of the universe. Do that. They do that in hushed tones. But God's running videotape for all of you heathens over there at NBC. So he's going to play that one back for you on Judgment Day. He's going to be very mad at you for deceiving those poor, ignorant young children. All right. What do I want to do? What do I want to do here? Politics? Justice? I got it all. Oh, let's start with the homosexual judge out in California. Shock of all shocks, lawyer James Ware, who also is a judge, by the way, I think judges are lawyers who have achieved a level of wickedness so high that they don't even wear regular clothes anymore. They just wear a black robe so that when they descend into the vortex, into the pit of hell, they'll feel comfortable with all that darkness around them. Judge James Ware, out in California, has ruled on ex-judge Vaughn Walker's decision to uphold and promote homosexual marriage in the formerly great state of California. So I forget exactly how this went. Californians voted that they didn't want homosexual marriage. And then someone took him to court and got that thrown out. And then Judge Walker came in, and he's a homo who lives with another guy. And he said that the homos were right. And now another judge has said, despite the fact that Judge Vaughn Walker is an avowed homosexual and is actively in a relationship with another guy, despite all that, Judge Walker's decision should stand. He should stand with the homosexuals. Judge Ware has ruled that a judge who's a homosexual and may benefit from his own ruling, well, that judge's decision is allowed to preside. A shock of shocks. He should have been allowed to preside over the case, and his ruling should stand. Ware wrote a 21-page opinion on why the homosexual judge has no interest, and in the fact that he's a homosexual shouldn't be considered. 21 pages, Mr. Ware, indeed. Well done as a lawyer. That's another thing about being a lawyer. The blacker the robe and the law, the thicker the decisions you write, the more you'll be looked upon as a success in your current career field in the justice system. And the faster you will descend into that vortex and that pit of fire, brimstone, darkness, and all that down there in hell. Judge Ware said, quote, "It is not reasonable to presume that a judge is incapable of making an impartial decision about the constitutionality of a law solely because, as a citizen, the judge could be affected by the proceedings." I might not argue with that. I mean, judges have to rule all the time on things that affect everyone, including the judges. So I might not disagree with that portion of Mr. Ware's reasoning. He goes on. Judge Ware likened the situation of a homosexual judge who admits to being in a long-term relationship with another homosexual. I'm sorry, folks. It just grosses me out, okay? It gives me the willies. Thinking about two 60-plus-year-old lawyers, you know, shacking up in a condo in San Francisco. It's just disgusting, okay? Anyway, this judge, he likened the situation of a homosexual judge who admits to being in a long-term relationship with another homosexual and deciding on possible future financial and social benefits. He compares that to a situation of a black judge ruling on an issue of civil rights. So there you go, my black brothers and sisters. You've once again been lumped in with the deviants by the liberals. You would think that at some point in the not-too-distant future, black America is going to stand up and say, hey, stop lumping us in with the sexually perverted, deviant homosexual community. I mean, wouldn't you think? I would be offended if they started comparing this to, I'm just a regular white guy. I got nothing going for me. Well, let's say they started comparing the homosexual struggle to the struggle of the Irish who came here after the potato famine and they were discriminated against. I would say, wait a minute. I mean, I'm proud to be Irish and all that, but don't be lumping me in with I can't even say it. Don't be lumping me in with those deviants. How about that? We'll just call them deviants. I got the kids in the studio. They might hear what I say. So we've got to, I could explain to them what a deviant is. I'm prepared for that at this point in my career. But there are certain aspects of the judge's Proposition 8 ruling that I'm just not comfortable discussing with my children yet. Heaven forbid that I should ever have to discuss it with them. Lord, please, just don't tarry. I would be fine with that. If you want to come back right now before I have to have any of these conversations with my daughters, Lord, I would be very grateful. I mean, I look forward to living on this planet But if it would get me out of those conversations, take me now. Take me now, Lord. Come back now. Amen. All right. Now, what else do we have here? Oh, from the politics file, I've got an article from CNSnews.com. Apparently, there was a hearing this past week on Muslim radicalization in U.S. prisons. It was hosted by Representative Peter King, a Republican from New York, and he was investigating allegations that there is a massive and coordinated effort within prisons in the United States to recruit black prisoners into the Muslim religion and perhaps to even radicalize them towards terrorism. So that's what the hearing was about, trying to paint a picture for you. So you can see the Republicans and the Democrats up there with their powdered wigs on. Do they still wear powdered wigs? No, they don't actually wear the powdered wigs anymore. But you can just see them powder their noses. Well, I don't think Barney Frank was involved in this particular hearing, but we'll look into that. Anyway, Representative King called this hearing, and Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas, she was asking some questions. She mentioned, for the record, she mentioned the case of a man who blew up an abortion clinic, a white man who blew up an abortion clinic, and she proposed that this perhaps was an attempt to undermine U.S. law that allows a woman to procure an abortion. Yeah, so she quotes a story of a white Christian man, He was a Christian, and he blew up an abortion clinic. And she wanted to know, does this indicate that the white Christian community may be intent on undermining the law that allows women to procure abortions? Or more pointedly to say that allows a woman to kill her child. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee went on to say, quote, "As we look to be informational, we should include an analysis of how Christian militants or others might bring down the country. We have to look broadly at this issue, do we not?" Well, I would say not, Miss Jackson Lee. What does she say here? She said the issue here is whether or not Christians intend to undermine the laws of this nation. And I think it is clear, said Jackson Lee, that is the case, that Christians seek to undermine the laws of this nation. She wants a full-blown investigation as to whether or not Christian militants may be plotting terrorist attacks, blowing up abortion clinics. Let's see, what else would Christian militants be wanting to blow up besides abortion clinics? Probably not much else. Say again? Well, no, I don't think that. I'm not even going to say that on the air. I can't believe you said that. I'm just trying to think of what else Christian militants might go after. Anyway, Ms. Jackson Lee, let me clarify something for you, you disgusting, foul, unwashed heathen. First of all, we Christians, our determination is not to bring down the country. Our determination is to pull the country back from the rim of hell where you and the other heathen scum have drug it. And we're not going to do it by blowing up anything. We're going to do it by, believe it or not, Sheila, we're going to pray for you. And we're going to preach the gospel and we're going to preach the truth to those who you are hell-bent on deceiving. That's what we're going to do, Sheila. Is it a conspiracy? Yes, it is a conspiracy. Should you be concerned, Sheila? Absolutely, you should be concerned. We're coming for you, Sheila, and we're going to do our best to yank you out of the pit before you're sucked down to eternal damnation, which is your just reward at this point in your career. So Sheila Jackson Lee is on to us. So I want to be clear with Sheila Jackson, Ms. Lee. Yes, it's a conspiracy. But it's not militant in the physical sense. It's militant in the spiritual sense, at least around here, Sheila. So be afraid. be very, very afraid. All right. Now, what else do we have here? There's a mother. Oh, boy. I don't know if I want to do this story. There's a story from Corpus Christi, Texas. I hate it when stories like this come out of Texas because, you know, I often fantasize in my own mind that Texas will probably be the last free state and that we'll all end up going there. But then you actually see what's happening in Texas and you realize that it went to hell in a handbasket decades ago with the rest of the country. They're just, I don't know, they look better doing it somehow. I don't know. But from Corpus Christi, a judge in Corpus Christi had some harsh words for a mother in his courtroom as he was sentencing her for the crime of spanking her child. Yes, Judge Jose Longoria said to the woman, quote, "You don't spank children today. In the old days, maybe we got spanked. Today, you don't spank children," unquote. That was from a judge sitting on the bench. As if he's an advocate for justice. He's all dressed up like he's an advocate for justice, and these words come out of his mouth from the bench. Now, Rosalina Gonzalez had pleaded guilty to a felony charge of injury to a child for what prosecutors had described as, quote, "a pretty simple, straightforward spanking," unquote. Prosecutors noted that the mother did not use a belt or leave any bruises, just some red marks. Red marks, that's the indication of a quality spanking. No bruises, but red marks. She should be commended. She should probably teach a class. She was judged by the Texas justice system as having committed a crime, which would make me tend to believe that she had done something immoral for which she should be punished. I think if you commit a crime and you do something immoral, criminal, that you should be punished. I'm all for that. So the court says she's guilty, but before imposing a punishment, they offer her a plea deal, which will involve the exchange of some amount of money to the state and to the prosecution, in order for them to basically turn their head aside and decide that it wasn't all that immoral after all. I mean, it was really immoral until you agreed to take these parenting classes that you'll be paying the state for. We're making some money there. If you'll agree to pay us some money and some fines, well, maybe it's not so immoral as we thought. You know, maybe. As part of the plea deal, Gonzalez will serve 5 years probation. She's got to pay some ducats for that. That'll cost her some money. So the state makes a little change there. She'll have to take parenting classes. She'll be paying the state for those. She has to follow Child Protective Services guidelines, which means they'll probably get to come and visit her house. And she has to make a $50 payment to the Children's Advocacy Center. And after making those payments, paying those bribes to the government there in Corpus Christi, well, then they'll pretty much let her off. Despite the fact that they judged her guilty of committing an immoral criminal act, of spanking her child. You know, judges need, I think there are a lot of judges who need a good old-fashioned whipping with a razor strop. And on the bare skin, you lift that robe, Your Honor. Of course, I'm only saying that in symbolic terms. I would never actually advocate the physical assault of anyone in the legal profession. That was all just figurative and like that. Well, I want to talk about, here we go. I'm almost out of time. How this show is way too short. It's crazy. From Houston, back to Texas, we've got Cynthia Gonzalez, also known as Cynthia Martinez, for those of you who may not have been confused enough, is not new to the criminal justice system. Her rap sheet goes back 20 years, but now she's accused of stealing from, are you ready? Deputies are publicizing a video during a march service at a Houston church where Ms. Gonzalez Martinez appears to be participating in the church service. But about 7 minutes into the video, she moves behind her victim, even looks her victim in the eye, exchanging peace signs. Right before the victim goes to take communion, Ms. Gonzalez Martinez moves her purse from the top of the pew seat to underneath it, and Martinez basically robbed the woman's wallet out of her purse right there at church. Yeah, in a church service in Houston, Texas. Investigators believe she has struck many, many churches in the Houston area, and they say it seems that she's taking an awful lot of things from these churches. But the one thing she isn't taking with her is the message. And I would just offer a question there. Are you sure she's not taking the message from the church? Because she's probably going to these big modern Texas Houston mega churches where Jesus Christ forgives everyone and he loves everyone no matter what. And so she's probably convinced that she can steal people's purses in church. In fact, that's the best place to steal. Because Jesus is going to just forgive you, right? I mean, you steal somebody's purse at a bar, you might be in big trouble. But if you're at a church, you just say, I'm forgiven. Hey, remember? I'm forgiven. Yeah, that's what you've been preaching up there. All right. How much time? Very, very little. Oh, I don't know if I have time to do this. Okay, the Louisiana State House voted 65-30 to recommit a bill that would have effectively banned abortion. After the bill's author, Representative John Labruzzo, provided a fiscal analysis showing that the state was at risk to lose $4.5 billion in Medicare funding if the bill were to pass. Louisiana is an example of anti-abortion rights legislation effectively banning anti-abortion legislation. Did you get that? The laws that the pro-life community has put on the books. This is related to the Hyde Amendment. You've all heard of the Hyde Amendment, which allegedly makes federal funds and abortion, it separates them. Well, the Hyde Amendment requires Medicaid funding for abortion services to terminate the pregnancy of rape victims, incest victims, or a pregnancy that would, quote, jeopardize the mother's life, unquote, whatever that means. So the Hyde Amendment has the language right in there that makes it, that basically hangs over the heads of states. If a state passes a bill banning all abortions, they're going to lose their Medicare funding via the Hyde Amendment, which was fought for by pro-lifers. So what does the state of Louisiana, the legislators there, what do the legislators decide to do? They decide to abandon the anti-abortion legislation and cling to the $4.5 billion in Medicare funding, some of which is used every day for abortions. So it's an extortion via the Hyde Amendment. States are addicted to federal money, and the threat of losing that money has caused the people to consent to the killing of innocent children. I'm Doug McBurney, reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.